It is people over everything.
Yeah.
Relationships are the highest priority any of us can ever have. That's all we'll take home with us. You and I are both investors and business builders and want to make an impact in every aspect of our lives, including that one. But all we'll take with us is the relationships and the investment we made in the lives of other people while we were here.
One of the great joys of my life has been building Fort Capital, something that I have loved for a long time. One of the best parts about it is building it with our incredibly talented team across three offices, Fort Worth, Dallas, and Houston, and our team abroad. We've built an incredible enterprise focused around a mission of being the best real estate operator in the world. We really believe the better that we get at operating, the better that we get at investing. We've built some incredible technology that gives us the ability to see data that others can't and operate our company as efficiently as possible and deliver better customer service to our tenants and really everybody involved. If you want to know more about our thesis, I encourage you to go to our website, fortcapitallp.com, where we talk about why we've been investing in Class B industrial real estate since 2016, hyper-focused on it. You can learn how you can help us find deals, more about our technology and how we think about it. You can see job openings. Highly encourage you to check out our newsletter or follow us on LinkedIn. And you can do all of this by going to fortcapitallp.com.
One of my favorite things to do is raise capital. Always been something I love doing. I love putting together deals. But one thing that is always tough for me is putting together the actual pitch deck, which is really important when you're raising capital. Or whether it's a corporate overview or a track record deck or investor reporting collateral, but putting together any kind of deck for guys like me has always just been tough. And so finding a company that could do it and not only do it, but blow your mind and make some of the best pitch decks you've ever seen was really cool. Enter Better Pitch. Better Pitch has taken the lead and is making some of the best pitch books I've ever seen. And if you think that not having a great pitch book is important when either raising capital, showing off your company, showing off your track record, showing off to investors, you're mistaken. I think your pitch book is one of the most important pieces of collateral that you could have. So I highly recommend checking out Better Pitch. They have an incredible team. They will work with you. And if you're a Fort listener and you tell them that, they will work with you on as many revisions as you need until you're 100% satisfied. So go check them out. Dean, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
So for those listening, Dean and I met actually this summer up in the mountains and got to spend 48 hours together. And
not a bad gig.
It was not a bad gig. Cloud Camp is something special.
It is.
And I got to sit and listen to Dean talk and definitely changed the way I thought about a lot of things. And I'm glad we've been able to really build a kind of a friendship since then.
Absolutely. This will be fun.
This will be a lot of fun. Let's just start with kind of your upbringing. Who is Dean?
Yeah, Dean is a product of two amazing parents, Duncan and Joan McFarlane, who brought me into the world in 926-58.
Okay.
And I'm 65, and I feel really grateful, Chris, just to have the family of origin that I have. I mean, when you stay alive for a long time, you have a chance to hear a whole lot of people's story. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly, my parents were very imperfect, but man, they tried hard. They got a lot right. And we'll talk more about it, but a big part of my dad and I are similar people in that we're not going to whip anybody with our smarts. You know, we better work hard and and figure out, have a little bit of a street sense about us. Yeah. And he definitely gave me both those things. And I'm forever grateful for that. And amazing family, kind of I hear a lot of stories of a lot of wreckage, in family of origin. And that just wasn't the case. I had a really, really cool upbringing. We did have some challenges. My dad was a very successful insurance guy, corporate executive type. So we moved a lot, and that was not easy as a young man. We covered a lot of ground. I was born in Jacksonville, Florida, which is a great spot, and then moved pretty quickly to Minneapolis, Minnesota, then again to Minnetonka, Minnesota, and then to Houston, Texas for elementary school and junior high. That brought me to Texas, which I'm forever grateful because I ultimately got back here. But the high school years were a challenge. I moved up to New Jersey. And for a young Texas kid, that says yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am to his teachers, you traveled to New Jersey. It's a different ballgame. It's like being on the moon. So Anyway, I'm super grateful for all that. They just instilled a lot of great qualities. My mom is my hero. I talked about my dad, but it's not that my dad wasn't great, but my mom carried a really heavy load because my dad was on the road a lot. And she just was she did a great job being a boy's mom, you know, but demanded a lot and was, you know, loving, but taskmaster.
Yeah.
And she wasn't afraid to tell me how things ought to work. So I'm so grateful for both of them. Let me touch on my brother and sister.
Of course.
Yeah. My brother, Andy, you know, if I think about heroes in my life, it's my mother. My brother, we'll talk more about some other really strong influences and mentors in my life that really have brought me tremendous joy and great encouragement. But my brother's 4 years older. He was blessed with all the smarts in the family. He is really a brilliant man. He's a doctor by profession, although he's retired from that now. But he's definitely a hero of mine just in terms of how he led his life. And I'm a person of faith, and a big part of that is he introduced me to that. And we can talk some more about that later. But the crown jewel of the family is my sister, Joni, yeah. which I think you said we might want to dive into.
Let's dive in.
Now? Great. That's one of my favorite topics to discuss, just because of the incredible influence she's been, not just on my life, but my mom and dad, my brother, our friends all love Joni. And her journey's been different. You know, she is what I would call a high-functioning special needs person.
Okay.
And I say that specifically because God uniquely made her that way. You know, this was not a mistake, you know, but at birth, she experienced some things that caused some damage that has caused her journey to be different. But I look forward to introducing you to her sometime because she is a joy. If she was sitting here, she would be on this mic rather than me. She would want to talk to you and have no fear whatsoever. She's just a really kind soul that has moved to Dallas a couple of years ago. And she lives about a quarter of a mile from our house. And every day is a blast with her. I mean, it really is. So we can talk more about that. But she's definitely made a huge impact on my life. I would just tell you from the get-go, and continues to this day, teaches me a lot about my inadequacies as a person and how I navigate this world. And I love the fact, you know, a wise man once said that you need to be joyful always. That's not a choice. That's a command.
Yeah.
And she does that. How she's wired, she chooses his joy, and it influences all of us that are around her. So,
well, I talked to a few people leading up to this, and virtually everybody said you have to talk about Joni and her impact. So let's just keep going there for a second. What is it about Joni? You know, we hear special needs, and we can think maybe, you know, we don't know how to approach it.
Sure.
But almost unequivocally, when you talk to people that have special needs in their family, it's always them that, like you said, has the joy. You kind of wish you had what they had.
Yes, absolutely.
What does she have that you've kind of witnessed and that's impacted you?
Yeah. My wife says this all the time. This describes Joni: the pure in heart will see God.
Yeah.
And she truly has a pure heart and loves people, is a kind soul. She can stir things up too. She can create a few challenges every once in a while. She's a McFarlane, so she likes getting her own way. You know, I think that's genetic in our household. But anyway, what makes her special is just how she navigates the world. Her focus on the person. You know, she's not looking past anybody, figuring out who they're going to talk to next. You know, she looks into your soul when she talks to you, and she genuinely appreciates people. She loves a good conversation and a big hug. She is very thoughtful. You know, there's a gal at my office that's having a baby, and there's a baby shower coming up. And like three times a day, literally, she's calling me because she's got to be sure she gets Rebecca a baby shower gift. And I don't think about those kind of things as much as she does, but it's just little things like that, you know, and it's how she makes you feel when you're with her. Isn't that true of all relationships? You know, you just come away from certain people and you go, wow, you know, I feel valued. I feel seen. I feel accepted. And that's Joni.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. You said my parents didn't get everything right, but they got a lot right. If you had to pick one or two things to say they got this right, and I'm hoping that I'm getting this right too in my household, what would those be?
Yeah. It is people over everything.
Yeah.
Relationships are the highest priority any of us can ever have. That's all we'll take home with us. You know, you and I are both investors and business builders and want to make an impact in every aspect of our lives, including that one. But all we'll take with us is the relationships and the investment we made in the lives of other people while we were here. And so my mom and dad were very, very relationship-oriented people. And I say it starts with their own relationship. You know, my mom was a faith-based person. My dad actually wasn't. You know, he was a person that had unbelievable core values. I talked to you about, you know, the work ethic he gave me, and he wanted to be a man above reproach. He had high integrity and high character, and wanted to make sure he developed that in us as kids. So I think those core values that they transferred to us were super important. My mom was the most selfless person I've ever known. And I mean that in an appropriate way. I mean, she gave her life away for us as kids and her husband. And their marriage, let's see, he passed away when I was 30. He was 61 years old from cancer. But, you know, he was a husband of one wife, and their marriage was, let's see, they got married when he was 20 and she was 18, I think.
Oh, wow.
So they had a long, long marriage and really, you know, mutually committed to each other. And honestly, that's a big part of when I talked about my family of origin. Tony and I've been married 43 years. I mean, that has been the greatest privilege and the greatest gift that I could ever receive. You know, somebody uniquely committed to an imperfect person like me that's going to, you know, believes this is important and wants to make it last. And so I cannot underestimate, you know, the difference that existed in my parents' life, and it's transferred into mine and my wife's.
And we're going to talk about that in a second, because when you were introduced and when they were talking about you at Cloud Camp, the young guys, but also the older guys, they all said one thing. They said, nobody has a better marriage than those two right there.
That's super kind.
And that was Mac, that was Trevor, that was the young people. And then the older folks that knew you, they said, that's who you need to focus on right there.
Yeah.
We'll get there in a second. Your brother brought you to Christ. How did he do that?
Yeah, it's a unique story because, like many older brother, younger brother relationships, it wasn't a cakewalk. I mean, we butted heads a lot. And he was an athlete, played football. He was everything I wasn't. Smart, athletic, gifted. And I was the way God made me. Okay, so I'm okay with it. But that wasn't me. I struggled with insecurities. I was overweight, easily discouraged, you know. And so we butted heads a lot. And in high school, all of a sudden, I started growing. You know, I was 4 years behind him. And he's 5'10". Well, he says 5'11". There's no way.
sorry, Andy.
Sorry, Andy. But yeah, so we butted heads a lot, but I started growing. And so in high school, I got bigger, and they couldn't push me around as much, you know, he and his other buddies. And that was good. You know, I could fight back a little bit. I think I grew 4 inches in one 4 to 6 month period, you know, and I got up to 6'4". I'm not 6'4" anymore, but you know, aging will do that to you. But yeah, to answer your question, Andy very clearly, he came into his relationship with Christ through the ministry of Young Life. And that's, I think, a familiar story for many people that grew up and around that ministry. And he got very serious and very committed to his faith at a very early age. I would say 15, 16 years old.
Wow.
And then practically speaking, and this, I love telling this story because it's so simple. Back in the day, there were J.B. Phillips Bibles. They're still around, but not in as high a use. But he gave me a J.B. Phillips Bible, and he just said, hey, man, I suggest you investigate the claims of this man, Jesus, because if they are true, it changes everything. And you've got to decide what you do with Jesus. And I was like, well, that's crazy, but I guess I'll read the book.
And at that point, you were not on either side of the train. You were just kind of agnostic.
I wouldn't say I was agnostic. No, I probably should have started there. I was raised in the church.
Okay.
My mom practiced her faith in the Catholic Church. And, you know, that was something that was really interesting to me. I always had a reverence for God. I really did. I think that kept me, a desire to serve my parents and a reverence for God kept me from making a lot of poor decisions. And so I'm super grateful for that. I would say I was committed to God, and I was really, really interested in loving and serving God, but I didn't understand what salvation was. I didn't understand what Jesus had done personally for me on the cross, and that he invites all of us to respond to that and have our lives be transformed by the power of his Spirit moving in us. Yep. And so he was very simply just gave me a book.
Okay.
And that book happens to be inspired. And when you read it and you allow God to work in your life, it will change everything. And so I started in Matthew and Mark, Luke, and by John, I knew I was a mess. And I needed this person that the Bible was talking about in the form of Jesus. And that would be my way to restore my relationship to this holy God that I wanted to love and serve.
That Matthew through John has had, I followed that same journey. If you start in the Old Testament, it's not a bad place to start, but it's tough.
Yeah.
If you haven't read the Bible, I couldn't more highly recommend going at least Matthew through John and at least stopping there and reflecting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
It's deep.
Yeah. And like I said, I wasn't going to whip anybody with my intellect. So I needed simple stories. And frankly, that's why Proverbs is so useful to me. You know, that a friend of mine and mentor and a partner in life and ministry for many years, he got me started in the Proverbs, you know, probably 25 years ago. And they're just such useful tools to navigate life. And they're short. Yeah. Most of them are short. You know, the verses are short, so they're easier to memorize. But yeah, I'm super thankful for my brother. And that is truly why he's one of my heroes, because he changed my life just by offering me a book.
And so you read that. And then what happened after you were done kind of reading the New Testament?
Well, very early on, God gave me an appetite to grow in my faith. And I knew Philippians 3:10, it says, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death. And so very quickly, that was the first scripture I ever memorized. And I wanted to know this Jesus. I wanted to understand how it all fit together and a triune God. What does Father, Son, and Holy Spirit mean? And so I had this passion to really dig in. And so, yeah, I made Bible intake a big part of my life from the time I came to my relationship with Christ the summer when I was 17 years old. And so I'm 65. It's been a long journey. And I would just tell you, I can't imagine my life without his Spirit at work in me and the instruction of his word and the counsel and care of other wise friends. You know, it just makes all the difference in the world, or at least has for me.
And you could probably sit here and say at 65, you're probably still learning as much about...
Oh, dude, you have no idea. I mean, I do not have a corner on the market when it comes to wise living. The answer to that is absolutely. And that's one of the things, you know, when we get into kind of life lessons, mm-hmm. one of them is intentional learning. I mean, I feel like I want to continue that the rest of my days. And yep. We don't ever have it all figured out. We're all in a journey. We're incomplete. There's a lot of pieces of the puzzle. And what we do know is, you know, there's a place that we can seek wisdom from. Yep. And then it's the question of, do you intellectually understand and know it? Or does your heart really allow you to apply what you're learning? Yep. And I think that's obviously the goal. Wisdom is application of wise principles. And then the question is, where's your wisdom come from?
Well, speaking of wisdom and speaking of one of the relationships that God tells us most important is your spouse. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody introduces me and says, that guy's figured out marriage probably more than anybody, maybe we can just talk about what do you know about marriage and your relationship with Tawny that maybe others could benefit from?
Let me start with her.
Okay.
Because I think if I describe her, you'll go, oh man, you hit the mother load, because I did. You know, she is a person of great depth and faithfulness. And at the same time, it's this beautiful thing of depth and simplicity. I'm prone to want to work and achieve and learn and grow and have 10 steps to a deeper relationship here or there or what I want to accomplish. And, you know, I think I may have shared this with you when we were up at Cloud Camp, but I've been a guy like since I was 17. I always had my personal goals every year I evaluated. I had a personal mission statement that came from God's word. And that informed a lot of my thinking. And so I was really purposeful, I guess is the best way to say it. And, you know, when Tawny and I got married, I would go over all my, hey, here's my strategy and these are my goals and this is what I want to grow. And some of it's good. You know, you want to always sharpen yourself and be a better person and a better friend and hopefully a better husband. And I said, so sweetie, what are your goals? Share them with me. And she goes, I want to love God and be happy. It's like, what?
That's it.
That's it. Come on. I mean, did you write it down? She goes, I don't need to. And that's my wife in a nutshell. She navigates life so incredibly well. And where I can kind of, you know, my energy and the way I'm wired will take me up and down. And I I live hard. I love hard. I, you know, I'm loud. I can create some conflict in my relationships by not saying things appropriately, maybe, and discourage folks. And she is just so consistent. And when you are in a business like we are, where we exert a lot of effort, we may have to travel significantly, there's a lot of temptations. Having somebody in your home that's the best place to be at the end of the day. You cannot wait to go home because of how that person loves you in the form of a wife completes you. That language, I think, is really useful when you're thinking about marriage. And she's just done an amazing job of that. And so a tremendous support and encourager. You know, what is courage? You know, what is encouragement? It's breathing courage into someone. Mm. And she's done that for me. She's a huge, huge part of who I am and how God has shaped me through her and completed me, in all honesty, and continues to today. Because I can create a lot of frustration in relationships. And she helps, you know, by His grace, I'm better than I was when I was 40 or 20. But there's still a lot of room for improvement there, and she's a great help at that.
You've seen a lot of folks, even through Reengage at Church, but you've seen, imagine a lot of the listeners are 30s, 40s, entrepreneur. They're us. They've got big personalities. They drive hard. But you've seen things, you know, myself included, and you've heard a little bit about my story, but you've seen it where it can go off the rails. Yeah. What gets it back on the rails?
Awesome question. And I think these principles are consistent for people of faith or people who haven't even arrived at what they believe yet and are still searching and investigating. But the first one starts with draw a circle around yourself. You know, the Reengage ministry is so powerful, and it's truly a discipleship tool for marriage. That's all it is. It's giving you principles to navigate tough things.
Yeah.
Because we all create, as we talked about, we all create conflict. And so the first step of resolving conflict is acknowledging that you don't get to decide how everything ends. You know, you draw a circle around yourself and you focus on the challenges you have in your own life and let Tawny worry about her life. And that is a key principle in any relationship, but especially in marriage. And then just understanding of what God thinks about marriage. Yeah. And, you know, that it's super important and it's for life. And I realize lots of things happen in the world, and divorce can happen in a broken world, and it does, but it's not the end. Yeah. You know, it's an opportunity to grow and be sharpened and encouraged. And hopefully I've seen a lot of people remarry, you know, and so it's not the end, and God loves divorced people.
Yeah.
So we should too. It doesn't define you.
Yeah.
It's a part of your journey.
I remember the chapter, they're all great chapters, but the chapter on basically expectations.
Yeah.
And when they're so high that you basically, I mean, that's the one that just pierced me to my soul, was high expectations. When you're holding everybody around you to high expectations, one, that probably flows from the expectations you set for yourself.
Yeah.
But for me, it was this realization that I was basically creating a losing game for everybody around me because they weren't ever going to meet my expectations. And the saddest part of it all was when people in my group asked me, well, what are your expectations? Yeah. I couldn't even articulate them.
Yeah.
It was just like better or higher or more. Well, and that was about as sobering of a chapter as I've ever read.
It is. It is. And you touched on a great point, because high achieving people, you know, it's the good and bad of your personality. Your greatest strength can turn into your worst weakness in a moment's notice, if not kept in check. And it's true in our relationships. I think I mentioned to you in Cloud Camp, my struggles really revolve around fear and anger and control. And so, you know, those things are all just a subset of a prideful person, you know, which I acknowledge that I am, and I've been at work on it for my whole life, and I'm still at work on it. But high achieving people often suffer from that disease. It's like a larger view of self than they should have. And so a healthy marriage is being willing to put the interests of others before yourself. That's a principle that is really challenging to do. It's easier to say. It's very challenging to do. And, you know, that was early on in our marriage and in the life of our children. That was our family mission statement. You know, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but in humility of mind, put others' interests before your own. And the peace of God that surpasses all understanding is going to guide you if you do that. And so that is the challenge for all of us who are selfish and controlling and fearful and get angry. Hey, is that going to help the situation right now in the relationship that's the most important in my life and with my wife? And so it's a sense of a personal awareness. That's why I said drawing the circle around yourself. You know, I think it's James 4:6 that says something to the effect that God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And we just got to remind ourselves of that. You know, I can be very, I tell people all the time, I like what I want, when I want, how I want it, as much as I want, you know? Yeah. And it's just, it's selfish and it's inconsistent. And that's going to create all kinds of problems in all of our relationships, and especially marriage.
Well, it's so funny, the circle around yourself. I remember when our friends told us to do Reengage and we did it. I just remember the whole day, like leading up to that Sunday, I was like, all right, this is going to be awesome for Michael. This is going to be great for her. We're going to change all this stuff. And then that first chapter was basically, you're going to spend the next 16 weeks inside this circle that you draw around yourself and do not focus on that other person. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, mm-hmm. but it's the only place to start. If you can't start there, I don't think any other chapter matters, really. Yeah.
I'll get to another point that where we're going in that discussion about marriage, but I want to affirm you in something. There's an expression I have Tony and I have been leading Reengage groups. We're not currently, but we have for probably 14, 15 years, you know, and why do you do that? Well, because it helps our marriage, you know, sharing, you can't tell somebody else the best approach for marriage if you're not practicing it yourself and modeling it for it. So that refinement really, really helps our marriage. But one of the things I was immediately drawn to you when we first met is you share your junk.
Yeah.
I was unknown to you, you know, and you to me. And I just am so attracted to that. I call it backing up the truck and dumping everything out, because the way we heal personally and in relationships, you can't work on and heal things you can't articulate, and you'll never hit a target that you don't understand.
Yeah.
And so what is the target of good human relationships? What is the target of being faithful in God's man in marriage and with friends and at work? And so the idea, the way you get well, is you got to share and you got to articulate the challenges as a couple, individually and as a couple, and then start to take them one by one. You know, I always tell the groups we lead, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Yeah.
and that's just a funny analogy, but it's true. It just, you know, it takes years to dig the holes that we do for ourselves.
Yeah.
And we all think we can get out of them in moments. And that's just not the case.
Every quantum leap I feel like I've taken in my life, even my relationship with Jesus, all started from somebody willing to tell me something terrible they had done. And all that did for me was, I think we especially live in a world today with social media and just where everything seems like everybody else has it all together. And so it enforces us to show up with even more of a mask than maybe we have in generations before. And to me, it's what you said, the most attractive, life-moving moments in my life weren't going to some huge conference and all this, being taught all this stuff. It was literally a conversation by a campfire where somebody said, I really effed up. Here's what's going on in my life. Mm-hmm. And you immediately feel connected to that person. And it immediately makes you realize, okay, it's okay to be imperfect.
Absolutely.
I'm a sinful person.
It connects us. We all know we're a mess. It's why not say it, you know? And
the biggest mess. I should rename the podcast, The Biggest Mess with Chris Powers.
But like many people, your mess has become your message. You know, you share your junk and then you say, hey, here's how I've made some progress. And again, I'm a work in progress, but I am taking the steps forward that will make me heal, maybe be a husband, better husband, father, and friend. And we'll get into the work aspect more, but I feel a big part of this is it's much more difficult to make a life than it is to make a living.
Yep.
You know what I mean by that?
Yep.
And I think there are a lot of things we can do in the workplace. I think God cares about every aspect of our lives, but he's much more interested in who we are rather than what we do.
Yep.
And so who we are is a work in process. Why not tell people? Yep. And hey, here are the things that I'm challenged on. And hey, Dean, what do you think about this? Yeah. You know, Chris, here's a thought, but and then Chris, can you help me with this? This challenge you seem like you faced it. I wouldn't know you'd faced it unless you told me. Yeah. So I think all those things are really important and help us be better and more effective in our marriages.
If you've made it this far, we're about to get into 10 life lessons that you've talked about, but you talked about life over living. And there's one more thing that really came up at Cloud Camp that landed, and we don't have to go through the whole checklist, but you have actually made a matrix or a list of how you decide how you're going to spend your life. And I think for me, I'm in a season right now where every day is my time is being asked for. From people I know really well, to people I don't know really well, to people I'll probably never see again, events, things, it's almost like it's overwhelming. And I told my wife the other day, I just said, I'm so overwhelmed. And what I'll sometimes do is I'll go from doing a lot to doing nothing. And as soon as I get to doing nothing, I'm like, oh, I got to fill this thing back up. Right. And it's just this cycle.
Right.
And I think part of it's the stage of my career, 3 young kids. Mm-hmm. It's just all that together, but
sometimes survival.
It's survival. Is
what you're trying to do and navigate the day.
And in the moment, I can justify just about anything of mm-hmm. why it's a good idea to go do it. And look, on a one-off basis, all of them probably are good things, but you stack them up and you look at, you know, my month of February where I was in town 13 days and all I'm doing while I'm in town is catching up and mm-hmm. playing catch up and trying to be dad. And so maybe you could just share how you've, after a long career where you probably went through similar phases, how you make decisions today on how you're going to spend your time.
Yeah, this is really an important thing. And I will tell you, I've gotten better at it, but it's still, again, I'm still trying to figure it all out. Who has been really helpful to me is my friend, Kyle Thompson. Okay. You know, Kyle was at Cloud Camp with us. And Kyle's the one that literally built a grid.
Okay.
You know, and that you're referring to.
Okay.
You gave me some credit that he deserved, but okay. Thank you. I've taken a little different approach. You know, Kyle's works for him and it's awesome, you know, in terms of how he deploys himself. Nobody's more organized and purposeful and thoughtful than he is. I'm a little bit more, I think it's really important to understand how you're wired. You know, I think the verse that informs this is each one should use whatever gifts he has received, past tense, right? Each one should use whatever gifts he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. So you gotta decide, hey, how has God made me? What's my purpose? Once you decide that, what informs it? How has God made me? How do I want to deploy myself? And it's a long journey. And so if we just run ourselves out early in it, we're not going to be very useful at the end. And one of the things I'm focused on is I want to finish well, man. I don't want to be a pain in the butt old man, you know, that just it's frustrating to people and discouraging. And Chuck Colson, do you remember that name?
You know,
Chuck did a lot of amazing things. He was a very gifted businessman. He was on, I believe it was Reagan's cabinet, and just a super gifted guy. He's the guy behind the prison fellowship ministry.
Okay.
And that brother was running really, really hard all the way to the finish line and faithfully, thoughtfully loving and caring for those around him and starting really amazing ministries. He was an accomplished author and writer and did a bunch of interesting things. But again, if that's the goal, how I deploy myself is really important. And so your question is, how do you decide to do that? And it's one, understanding your gifts and how you're wired, how you think you can make the biggest impact in the world, watching your dashboard to make sure you don't overheat. Yeah. I had lunch with a friend yesterday who's just one of my favorite people and a gifted, godly young man. And he and his wife are wonderful. And we were talking about that. You know, it's easy to overheat. You got to keep your hand on the dials and making sure your relationships are being monitored appropriately. And if something out of whack, you can't be too busy to not address it.
Yep.
And we were just talking through the pace of life, the tyranny of the urgent. And so I think what informs me about how to spend my time, and this isn't for everybody, okay? Mm-hmm. I want to acknowledge that up front. But as a person of faith, if I'm not sinning, I should be worshiping. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When I'm in sin, I definitely am not worshiping. I'm rejecting that. But if it's not sin, if it's not tangible, practical sin, then it's worship. And so work is worship to me.
Yeah.
And a lot of people go, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I'm getting my butt kicked. And the answer is, I'm in the real estate business right now. We're taking a few shoes to the rear end.
Yeah.
You know, it's challenging. And you have to rework relationships, you know, banking relationships and your investors. And you know, tough things that happen. And you've got to, that's where you distinguish yourself in terms of who you are. Is that how do I navigate these really difficult situations? And again, I very imperfectly, but that's the goal. So I'm trying to summarize to tell you, I live with the end in mind. I try to keep my eye on all the gauges, which are my personal relationships with Tawny, my kids, my beautiful 7 grandkids. You know, am I prioritizing them appropriately? We mentioned this at Cloud Camp, I believe, but Chuck Swindoll wrote a book. It was a study in Nehemiah. It's called Hand Me Another Brick. And I don't remember all about the book, but I remember one specific thing because it's really helped inform my life. Chuck said, you cannot expend yourself to exhaustion in the workplace. You have to save your very best for when you walk in that door at night. And I think if there's one thing that my kids will remember about me, I think I really tried to do that. And my wife tried to help me do that and be very present and very letting them know they were my highest priority. And that's the other way I make decisions. I think I did mention at Cloud Camp, you know, if my wife calls, I'm stopping this podcast right now.
Yeah.
I just take her call always because I want her to know next to Christ, she's my most important thing in my life. And that's one way you do it. And that may not be it for everybody, but it is for me.
Yeah.
And I've tried to do the same with my kids, even if my grandkids call. There's nothing so important that I can't talk to them because usually, and Joni, talk about, you know, Joni, I hear from at least 3 times a day. And it's a joy. It's 30 seconds, but I'm going to take that call. You know, it's just a touch and I want to talk to her. And so a big part of how you spend your time is what are you sensitive to?
Yep.
And if you get whipped up in the worries of the world, the deceitfulness of riches and the pride of life, it's going to be really hard to make the wise decisions in the moment when you need to be attentive to your relationships.
And I would imagine you would say all those things that you end up saying no to down the road, they never really mattered. In the moment, it's hard to say no. 90% of it, 99% of it's probably you could give a no to and be okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a practical example. I've had the opportunity to serve in the leadership of 2 different churches. Northwest Bible was the church where our kids were raised and just had a tremendous experience. And I had the opportunity to serve the church as an elder, overseer, shepherd there for 10 years. And then a new work was started that I had the opportunity to be a part of that's become Watermark Community Church. And Tawny and I have been there for 24 years now. And I served as an elder shepherd there for 20 years. And, you know, one of the things we decided as men when we were called to being elders is we eliminated some of the things you're talking about, you know, that are all good, you know, not-for-profit boards. And, you know, a lot of guys are involved in their country clubs and you got your running your business and doing other things. You're trying to be socially impacting and mindful of those kinds of things, but they all take time. And you just got to, this is where Kyle's so good. You got to have that grid that you prioritize your time on the things that are going to be most important. So I stepped out of all my unrelated things that frankly were cool and neat things, but they didn't need to have priority during this time, this other thing. My leadership at the church and the stewardship of my company and of my family were the highest priorities. And there just wasn't much left to do those other things.
Yeah. All right. Lesson number 1, it's not about me. Why?
Well, I mean, that's the instruction from the Lord. You know, he basically said, you're broken and you need me to be completed. And once you make the decision to love and serve him and accept the free gift that he offers in the form of a personal relationship with him and forgiveness of your sins, it changes everything. And what you learn, the more you learn about Jesus, he called people to himself for sure. He aligned himself. He was the Son of God and the triune deity, but he gave his life away. One of my favorite verses is Mark 10:45. Have you ever heard that?
Which one is?
Yeah, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as ransom for many. If the Lord of the universe, that was his job description. You know, a lot of Christians I meet, it's like, I'm not sure what I should do or how I should. What's my purpose? And just read that one verse and try and do that. Serve people. Love God and serve his people. Tawny's mission statement. It's pretty good. You know?
Simple.
It's very simple. And so that's a big piece of my approach in terms of it's not about me. Because I'm prone to make it all about me.
Yeah.
Right? So if I'm reminding myself, it's really not. You're a participant in the greatest the greatest opportunity the world has ever known, and that's the advancement of God's kingdom. And as a follower of Christ, I get to participate in his grand plan. And the ROI is the best I've ever seen in any investment I've ever made.
And you're a real estate guy.
And I'm a real estate guy.
You've done some good real estate
deals. I like ROI. I do like ROI. Exactly.
Number two, diligently practice self-leadership.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what that means to me. And that is, you know, the scriptures tell us, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. And so, hey, maturity doesn't happen. You know, maturity is a process. And, you know, it's a journey. And so I think recognizing the fact it's not about us, but it is in this standpoint that we ought to be increasingly conformed to his image. So how do you do that? You discipline yourself for the purpose of righteousness. And the only way you can do that is you understand what he's calling you to. Yep. And so you spend time with his word and talking to friends. How do you do this? How does it work itself out in your life? So it's a big one, that the idea of disciplining yourself for that purpose.
If people don't, and you've probably come across a lot of folks that maybe don't have that support system around mm-hmm. them. What do you tell people? Like, where can they just start?
Like you and I did, one friend.
Yeah.
We had lunch. We shared our stuff. And just tell somebody about yourself. Well, I'm not comfortable doing that. They don't want to hear that. Honestly, people do. People want, especially nowadays, they want depth. They don't want surface. Like, tell me how you're really doing. And if I'm not going to go out on the street and tell all my friends what you just told me. You know, we got to be respectful of people and honor the confidence and the trust they place in us when they share with something with us, but treat it accordingly. But the more you can do that, the faster you can heal and get to the appropriate place. And I think that's just, it's really, really a good reminder for all of us.
You know, I couldn't recommend it enough. If you're listening to this and there's just something you want to get off your chest, you should.
And I'm in a season of life right now, Chris, you know that I'm a senior advisor, cheerleader, and coach for Mac and Trevor, and that's a privilege to do that. And I have other young men that I'm partnering with in business that I get energy from you. I get energy from these guys. I love how they're living their lives. I love how they're wanting to make a difference for the Lord and in this world and a positive social impact and care for other people. That gets me energized. And so I love spending time with those folks, and it pays rich rewards. You know, it's a mutually encouraging and sharpening relationship. I'm not one of these guys that needs to make, you know, if I sit in a room, boy, everybody's got to listen to me. I've learned a lot from you and a whole lot of other people. And when we stop learning, like we talked about earlier, I think you get stuck.
Yep.
You know, you've got to continue that process of being an intentional learner.
And maybe let's just sidebar for 1 second and maybe just go a little more into detail with what you're doing, the type of entrepreneurs maybe you're looking for to partner with and back, and kind of how you've thought about this next phase of your career.
Yeah. And thank you for going back there, because I forgot one thing I wanted to mention about that. I have more time now.
Yep.
I still am reasonably busy. I mean, I love to work. I genuinely love it. And especially if work is worship, why not? Right.
Yeah.
So that part is easy for me. I really, really enjoy it. But I have a little more time just to check in on people and go, hey, man, the guy I had lunch with yesterday, the way that lunch happened is about 2 months ago, I called him and I go, hey, I've just watched how you live. You've been around our family and we spent some time together. I'd love to spend more time with you. And I know he's a very busy guy, runs his own company. And I said, I don't want to be a burden, but if there's a way I can fit into a lunch here or there, or go have coffee, or I'll work out with you, whatever you want to do, I'd just love to get to know you better and figure out how I can serve you and pray for you and encourage you.
Yeah.
And who don't want to hear that? I know I need it. And and he just went, oh, that'd be awesome. And so we had our first lunch yesterday, and that came from my other friend, Beau Fournette. You know, I have a tendency to go, man, I need a big idea, a BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal. I'd love to build another company here or there and all that kind of stuff. And Beau's like, I'm not going to do that. You know, he's a younger guy. He's just transitioned out of his role at a large hedge fund. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And it's like, I'm just going to love God and care for people. And I go, okay, that's a great answer. My wife says that too.
Yeah.
How? And he goes, I just call them. I got people in my life that I've known or not known. And he had a friend at church, and this so encouraged me. I said, well, he was that particular guy was, I think, struggling with something and maybe had a surgery or something. And Bo goes, hey, man, he called him up and he just said, hey, I know your legs hurt, or, you know, I'd love to just drive you around this week and spend time with you. It's like, who does that? Yeah. I mean, I'm too selfish to do that, quite honestly. I mean, you're just going to drive him. And that's what Bo did. And yeah. He just loves people, you know? And I thought, man, that ain't a big, hairy, audacious goal. That's just being present with people and loving them. I thought that was really practical.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But you are, to some degree, if the opportunity's right, you will back an entrepreneur or get involved in their business in some capacity.
Yeah, we have with Trevor's first business. It's called Craftwork. A couple of guys, we came around Trevor and provided some startup capital and you know, learned a lot.
Yeah.
It Trevor would tell you he definitely did, and I did too. And look, if you're not learning, you're going backwards.
For sure.
And whether it's a big win or you know, a potential loss. But I do love spending time with young people, entrepreneurs or not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just stimulated by the next generation and how they're going to respond to the world that they're in. And is there anything I can do to help encourage them and empower them and breathe courage into them, like we talked about earlier?
I hope your email's ready. An unwavering commitment to hide God's word in my heart and to live and lead in such a way that others never doubt that God's word is sufficient for every circumstance.
I love this one because, you know, I've been walking with Christ, like we talked about, for a really long time. And I just love the fact that you have to have a blueprint. You know, there's a lot of things that are going to happen to you in this world, and really, really difficult things. And navigating that requires tools. And so the only way I know to appropriate those tools is to hide them in my heart. And what I love telling people, and this is hard for folks who personally don't have a faith or maybe have never spent any time in the Bible, but for me, there's never been an issue I've faced in my, 30 years of eldering and shepherding at our church, running a business, you know, that I started in 1984, my family, difficult challenges in kids and grandkids. There's not one thing I've ever faced that can't be, that the wisdom of God's word can't inspire and make better. And so there's so much that's there for us to give us rails to run on, you know, basic instruction before leaving earth. That's my wife's, you know, she's used that with the kids that she teaches. And it's just so simple and so wise. You know, we have a tool and we just need to learn to use it. And so that's where that principle comes from. You know, as a 65-year-old, my mind isn't quite as good as it once was in terms of scripture memory. And, you know, I think pouring that into yourself at an earlier age is just always going to serve you well.
What does the Bible say about how to handle a bad real estate market? Like, and I say it kind of joking, but kind of not. It's tough right now.
Yes. Look, wins and losses don't define you. They just don't.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a good friend that's going through a job transition right now, you know, and that's what I told him yesterday. I go, hey, this does not define you. You're an amazing man. And you'll get through this, and God has something else on the other side of this that hopefully is going to be as enriching as this could have been. And so that's where that comes from is, you know, you have to have the tools. You need each other to work through the challenges that you face. And in the real estate business, you're definitely going to have some of those. Yeah. And I think it's how you go through them.
Yeah.
It may not be necessarily how they end.
Yeah.
It's how you travel that road and how do you treat people? Do you spike in anger because you're just pissed off and frustrated? Or do you manage your emotions and respond appropriately in a really difficult situation? You know, one of the things that I'm thankful for is it was modeled for me by a mentor and pastor and good friend. He runs to the fire. And I believe as Christians, that's what we should do. Where there's a struggle or a challenge or a hurting person, we need to step into it and not go, oh, somebody else has that. It's like, hey, how can I love and care for that person? Yeah. You don't smack them with your Bible. You just love them. You be present. You express how much you care for them. You don't have all the box to check and flip a scripture on them. They want to see you love them. And that's spending time with them and doing small acts of service. And things that cooking a meal for them or whatever the case may be. So entering into the fire is, I think, a really important aspect of this.
Never sacrifice family for ministry, teaching and training your children along the way.
Yeah, that goes back to the Swindoll statement that he made about saving your best for when you walk in at home at night. I think, you know, our journey as parents is the greatest gift and the hardest challenge. I mean, in a moment, literally, it can change in a moment.
Oh, God.
How old are yours? I can't remember.
7, 4, and 1.
Okay.
So I'm in the fire right now.
Yeah. And my grandkids are, the youngest is 8. The oldest is about to be 14, I think, Sloan. But I think, you know, just watching all of the things that come at young parents, that's why earlier we were talking about, sometimes you just got to survive. It's kind of, you know, I can't have a quiet time today. I'm just trying to keep my kids alive. You know? And I think there's a lot of grace and freedom in that. Yep. You know, there are seasons for everything, but it's full contact sport, child rearing. And one of the things I'm grateful for, I mentioned to you, my anger would get the best of me. I could just, I called it going from 0 to 60 in 1.6 seconds. You know, you just spike, and it's just inappropriate. It's wrong. My wife has a way of telling me when I'm doing that. She goes, if you could see your face, oh my gosh, you had no idea, you know, and I don't even know it. You know, I do after the fact, you know, when she shares it with me. And so I'm trying to learn how not to be quite so expressive and in the way I communicate things. But that's hard for a Scotch Irish raised person with loud parents.
I'm with you, brother. I cannot really fake how I'm feeling very well. Or at least not for long. It lasts a few seconds.
Wear it on your sleeve.
Seriously. Uh-huh. Do the best I can every day and then go to bed.
Of all of them, well, they're all my favorite, but this one probably has had the most positive impact in my life, especially as a shepherd and an elder overseer. Were all the needs met when Jesus went to sleep every day?
Yep.
Did he meet every need?
No.
That was around him? No. Nor should we. You do the best you can, you go to bed. And my friend told me that, you know, probably 24 or 5 years ago. And it's been transformative, because as a type A overachiever, I want to be there for the body. I want to, when they have a need, I want to try and meet it. You know, all rightly motivated. I want to serve them. I want them to succeed in their relationship with Christ and with their families and each other. There's always unmet needs and brokenness in the world. And if we think God, again, back to number one, if we think God needs us, we're in big trouble, because then we're extending ourselves even further. And it's like the mice on the wheel. You know, you just can't win that battle. There's always more needs than you can meet. And so just coming to understanding that, hey, there were unmet needs then, and there are unmet needs now. So go to sleep and rest, and be ready to serve God and people tomorrow.
Okay, real quick. So you said, if you think God needs us, you're in trouble. What's the opposite of that?
Yeah, I mean, partnering him in a healthy, appropriate way, acknowledging how he's made you.
Yeah.
How he wants you to use your gifts for the service of others.
Got it.
You know, having an appropriate order, he can't wait to use that person.
Correct.
Someone who's broken and yielded and ready to acknowledge their shortcomings as they love and serve other people.
Yeah.
That's the point I was trying to make with
Got
that.
It. Yeah. Train future leaders with passion and purpose.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's not like I'm there to teach everybody or train everybody. I feel it's mutual. You know, my investment in people has always come back 10 times to me. So it's a privilege to get to meet younger people, learn their story, hear how your experiences might encourage them, their experiences might encourage you. But I just thrive on that. I thrive on people. My wife would go, you know, she's more of a homebody and she's great with people, but that's not her first choice, you know, whereas I default to usually a larger group.
Yeah.
And I love being around people. I draw energy from that. And so I think that's pretty much where that comes from.
Okay, have joy on the journey. That's an easy thing to say. How do you make the decision to have joy, or how do you have joy?
Yeah, it's a choice every day. It truly is. I mean, I know some people, my wife is just wired to be joy-filled. I mean, she's just a happy spirit. And it's part of that evenness and the faith-based thinking that gives her that peace and joy. But there's a reason that scripture in 1 Thess says, be joyful always. And then what comes next? Pray without ceasing. So the best way you can be joy-filled is to be a praying person.
Yeah.
And giving thanks for God in all things. It doesn't say give thanks because you have cancer.
Right.
It says give thanks because you have him to take you through having cancer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that's what that verse means to me. It's, there are a lot of days I don't really feel joyful, but I have to make a choice. And how am I going to navigate this situation? I want to acknowledge the reality that is here and the pain that's here, but I need to be joyful going through this challenging moment. It's not fun to do a workout with a lender.
Yeah.
It just isn't, yeah. You know,
but better things to do,
but I can choose joy in how we're navigating and not frustrating each other, man. I'm sorry. Can I just acknowledge this is really hard? I may lose part of your senior loan. You know, this may not turn out as well. I want you to know that doesn't make me a bad person. I'm going to try and do the best I can. I'm going to try and be above reproach. And I've done that well at times and less well others. But I think it's how you navigate those really difficult things gives you the ability to be a person that other folks look at and go, they are choosing joy in the midst of that challenge. Yeah.
I want to take one sidebar off that. I'm just curious your answer, but on you mentioned cancer and somebody might say any real God would never create, mm-hmm. allow someone to have cancer. Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that?
Yeah. One, to identify with their pain. You got to start there.
Yeah.
I feel you. I can't be you because I don't have cancer right now, but I realize the weight that this is on you. And so I don't want you to just give you tips and techniques to feel good. That's not what I'm about. I want you to know I really care about you. And I'm committed to pray for you first and foremost as you navigate this really challenging time. So if you skip to something other than that at first, you're really missing the opportunity to be heard and to care for that person. As the relationship evolves and you're talking about the kinds of challenges sick people go through, whether they be physical, emotional, spiritual, in every aspect, helping remind them of the things that they either maybe know to be true but aren't experiencing them in the moment, or maybe they've never known them to be true, that you can navigate a really difficult circumstance. Cancer shouldn't define you. You know, the journey of how you do cancer should. And what we don't know is what's the answer God's going to give us at the end.
Right.
I'll tell you a quick story. I can't remember if you've even heard about this, but my daughter, Callie, and my son-in-law, Ryan Nixon, their youngest son, little Ryan, who's 8, was on a roof recently at a friend's house. Well, he was playing on a tree with his friend and was stepping over to the roof 12 or 14 feet high and lost his balance and fell back and fractured the back of his skull. He took the brunt of the blow, was at the top, the bottom of his head, his neck, and his shoulders. And it's certainly a longer story. There were real concerns, you know, swelling on the brain and all kinds of things. The fact his spine wasn't broken. There were multiple miracles along the way. I'll start with the first one, that the dad of the young man whose house he was at was a Navy man and had also been a lifeguard, so knew CPR just drop of a hat, and immediately ran to my grandson, who had stopped breathing, and got him going again, you know, through CPR, miracle number one. You know, miracle number two, transported him to the hospital, and he had a seizure about the time my wife and I got there, and his parents were with him, and our daughter Callie articulated, hey, his eyes are not right, and he stopped breathing and was having a seizure. And miracle number two, by the blessing of really equipped doctors and nurses, they got him going again. But we still didn't know if his spine was intact. We didn't know, you know, what the future held for his damage to his head and the fractures in the skull. But, you know, there are lots more miracles, but I could go on. But no spinal damage. You know, he tested out. We thought there could be some potential long-term challenges, and God just chose to heal him. And the thing that's so hard is the sober awareness that many kids on the children's floor that he was on when he was getting great care at Children's Hospital, some of those kids may not get the same answer we got. And that's the mystery of God's world and how we have brokenness in it. You know, he came back to redeem all that. I mean, he died to redeem all that, and he will be coming back to make it all go away. You know, he'll dry every tear. There'll be no more pain, no more hurt. It'll be, I'll stop.
All right. Number eight, live in community with others who can help us grow and lead lives that honor God.
Yeah. This is something, listeners might go, how do you even get started on that? If you're a member of a church, a lot of churches have cell groups or small groups or things that you can get into. My life about community started right around the time we were married. My wife and I were married. I would say I had some community in college too, with some other young men that were kind of wired the same way I was, and we were interested in the same things. But, you know, I didn't even really know what community was, but I know I needed other couples in my life, in mine and Tony's life. And so what I do, I picked up the phone and I just called a guy that had become an acquaintance. And I said, hey, you know, I don't even know what this means, but would y'all go have dinner with us and just, can we talk about our lives together? And they went, sure. You know? And so we had dinner, and that led to a relationship, and we kept meeting, and then we invited another couple, and we did community before I even knew what it was. It's just inviting others into your life and talking about things that matter, both celebrations and hardships. And so that, I was really thankful God put that DNA in my heart early on, because I think that helped us in our raising of our children and just the relationships, having people to pray for you in the midst of all the things that we all face.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just highly encourage people to find that as quickly as possible. It's been a tremendous blessing for Tawny and I, and continues to be to this day.
All right, I really like this one. Recklessly pursue conflict resolution.
Yeah. I don't know why.
Because if you're in business, it's overcoming conflict of some degree.
Conflict. Yeah. Life is overcoming conflict.
Yeah.
You know,
even with yourself.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And so I've just watched the blessing of, you know, relationships being restored. You know, when we break them, it's the responsibility of both parties to work through them in a God-honoring way. And so I've done this very imperfectly in my life, and I'm still learning a whole lot about what this means, you know, in trying to resolve conflicts appropriately. And I think it's an opportunity for Christians to really show the world that there's a better way, rather than just continuing a war with one another, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And we sure see, you know, great options or, you know, great examples of that through social media and other places. So I think this is a daily awareness that we all create conflict, and then what's an appropriate approach to navigate that. And I think, you know, I've had multiple partners in my business, you know, through the years. And to this day, you know, we separated at different times in different places with each of them. I think there were a total of five of them. And I love talking to them now. I mean, we don't talk as much as obviously we once did, but we managed to navigate difficult situations, separation of a business partnership, and remain friends. And I feel like that, you know, that may be one of the things I'm most thankful for in my career, is I really have continuing deep friendships with people that we had to go through some hard things together.
Okay. If I just said I'm in a terrible conflict with someone and it's all their fault, I didn't do anything, but clearly I'm emotionally upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
Dean, how do I overcome this conflict? What would you tell me?
Well, because I know you and we have a trusting relationship,
yeah.
I would ask permission. Hey, can I tell you a hard thing? Is that okay, Chris?
Yeah.
And I'd wait for you to answer. I wouldn't just steamroller you. It's like, hey, this may not hit you just right. This may be hard to hear. Do you mind if I share that with you? And I think most people that are in conflicts are generally say yes to that. You know, there's a few like, I don't need to hear this right now, but most people will welcome that conversation. I hope I do, you know, always. It's just like, I'd love to hear something hard. I think that's what makes it better.
Yeah.
And so I ask for permission and then kind of in fear and trembling kind of wade into the conversation. But what you said is it's all the other person's fault. It's never all the other person's fault. So I tell my friend, let's start with drawing the circle around yourself. And hey, even if you're 1% of the problem, spend 100% of the time on your 1%. And shockingly, it will become, I think, an increasing awareness that maybe it wasn't 1%, maybe it was 30 or even 40 or potentially 90.
Yeah.
You know, you'll grow an increasing awareness over time. But if you start there, if you always start, hey, if my wife can get her stuff together and get fixed, then we're going to be great. Right. I mean, that's how relationships work. If that guy who treated me that way in business, if he just righted the ship, begged forgiveness from me, we're going to be fine. You know, and it just doesn't work that way. You know, so what we do is have to identify our 1%. And so we lean into the conversation rather than, hey, it's your fault. It's, hey, I acknowledge, you know, one of the conflicts in my life has been a real challenge. I have to acknowledge that I may not be right. You may be right, but I sense that maybe you're not going down the right path. Let me articulate a few things. And just like he's done for me in the past when I've been off the road. So one, we have to acknowledge we don't have all the solutions. God does. We have to acknowledge our own deficiencies and draw the circle around ourselves. And then we're much more useful to other people and getting them thinking through and talking through the damage of that the fracture. I've been a part of, in my role at the church, a lot of business mitigation, you know, conflict resolution mitigation. And you know, we're all about our rights and getting what we deserve. You know, that selfishness. We all have been hurt and we needed repercussions. You know, we want repercussions for that person. And if you can just think just the opposite of that, hey, what do I have to learn in this? Did I wound this person in some way that got us here before they even made the bad choice? What can I own? And just, it may be as simple as, hey, you know what? I'm not thinking great about you, just the way you're navigating this right now. Can I just confess that to you? And I don't have all the solutions, but I'd love to try and walk through this with you. Just find some way to connect and identify with them and what they're going through. I've done it well sometimes, and I've also made a big mess for myself at others.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know for myself, sometimes the feeling is if I give in or if I even let them think that maybe they weren't as wrong as they were, that I've somehow lost the battle. And I think the quote that for me came out of Reengage, I think it was there somewhere, was if forgiving someone is releasing a prisoner, and that prisoner is yourself, not the other person.
That's well said. One of the ways I was taught that, we used to lead trips, discipleship trips to East Africa, Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, Burundi. And, you know, there's a book that was been written called When Helping Hurts. And in that book, it talks about forgiveness. And, you know, arguably, you know, the few people in the world have been through as much trauma as the folks that have experienced genocide. And, you know, that was a lot of Christians that perpetrated that, you know, the Tutsis and the Hutus and, you know, the conflicts that arise between people. But this is another way of saying what the point you just made is, forgiveness or lack of forgiveness is like the drinking poison yourself and thinking the other person's going to die.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be able to extend that forgiveness to another person and not hold it. Otherwise it'll poison you.
Yeah.
You know, if we hold up on to a lack of forgiveness, it'll poison ourselves. And so I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great tool for that person in the midst of that, the conflict we were talking about, that's trying to navigate it well. And then just inviting others in. You know, when you reach an impasse or you're stuck with, let's say it's you and me, if we're stuck and we're continuing to grind the same axe, hey, let's invite a third party in this and just start to talk. And maybe it's one person or more people that can help mutually sharpen each of us and help us find areas we can agree on. And I call it gaining little agreements. It's just like negotiating. You've been negotiating your whole life. And good negotiator gain little agreements that total up to a positive negotiation.
Yeah.
And you can't just get your way when you want to gain agreements. You have to be able to navigate getting less than you wanted. And oftentimes asking for forgiveness is the bridge builder that allows you to gain the biggest agreement. It's just, hey, I'm going to forgive you. Whether this ever works out or not, you're forgiven. We're now good. I'm not going to speak poorly about you or think poorly about you. But once that happens, usually it breaks the ice where now two people can start talking. And if they're drawing the circle around themselves, they'll find common areas to restore the relationship.
And just to be clear, you don't have to be it re-engage for your marriage to draw a circle around yourself. No. And you should just approach life with draw a circle around yourself.
Exactly. I mean, I could give you three examples this week with my wife, you know, and yeah, it's just an incredible, incredible tool and an incredible way of living, you know, just to say, hey, Craig, what's my part in this?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest transformations for me, because there I lived a lot of life with like, I don't need anybody. I've got it all, was waking up and realizing I need a lot.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's always there every day, but I usually can get back there now. Real quick, you just said business mitigation. A lot of business people listen to this. You've got to probably sit in conflict resolution. So to set the stage, these are probably folks that might have sued each other, used the courts, but decided to go to Watermark and use elders basically as their quote unquote judges, trusting that the resolution that the church came up with might be. How many of these terrible business lawsuits do you think could be solved if they just went and brought a third trusted party in? Like, you've probably seen so much that you probably, like, what's your perspective on that?
I think it's massive.
Yeah.
If that one thing happened, just invited others into the conversation before it got to the courts, or even if it's in the courts, you know, to try and help two people find some common ground.
Yeah.
I think it would put a lot of lawyers out of work.
Yeah.
I mean that sincerely. And I'm glad you said back to me what I said. I said business mitigation. I meant a business mediation.
Mediation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arguably, maybe they're the same thing, but
yeah, no.
So the opportunity, and again, I think this is a great chance for God's people, and as we attempt to be the church, you know, which exists in us and through us as we gather together and try and be faithful in all aspects of our life. In this particular situation, in inviting others into the conversation, it just helps people see their part, you know, rather than trying to be defending and attacking, you know, the behaviors that can lead to, you know, inflammatory talk, you know, words that hurt people and end up in the courts.
Yep.
And so a lot of folks go, well, you may not be even equipped to handle the size and scope of this disagreement. And I would make a case that maybe that's true, but I've seen, you know, two people on the other side of large scale kinds of transactions/challenges where they're not in agreement and it's fracturing them. The same principles apply, rather if it's a, you know, you're arguing over a comic book or a multi-billion dollar corporation, you know, the principles of conflict resolution, putting the interests of others before yourself and not being prideful, being grace-filled and willing to ask for forgiveness and own your part, those principles can serve you despite the size or scope of the challenge or the business.
Yep. They're human issues.
They're human issues. And just so you know how I think about those things, because I've been a part of resolutions with both Christians and non-Christians, you know, and you don't smack them, again, we don't smack them in the head with a Bible.
Yep.
But I might quote a verse and not even say the address. I'll just say, you know, I was with a bunch of guys this morning. We're doing a thing called a Better Man Study. That's a ministry that my friend started. You know Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Barry's done a great job. And it's just a phenomenal ministry. And look, content's important. Relationships are how change happens. That's where transformation occurs.
Yeah.
And just men gathering, sharing their junk, talking through their challenges, maybe acknowledging the pain of the past, but not letting it define them for their future. And we were together this morning. One of the things we were talking about when it came to some of the things we're speaking about, you know, work and how to community, how to choose people in your life, you know, Proverbs 19:23, he who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm. Holy cow. You don't need to be a person of faith. You don't need to know to appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to, you know, align yourself with a bunch of stupid people making poor choices, guess what? You're going to soon follow. Even if you think you're going to change their behavior, they're going to drag you down versus you dragging them up.
I was going to say, you're an average of the five people you keep closest.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly.
you go look at somebody that's probably addicted to drugs or doing something bad, they're probably hanging out with a bunch of drug addicts.
Yeah.
There's no way you're hanging out with the right people and doing stuff like that at night. Or,
and at my age, you know, fear, anger, control, we talked about are some of my challenges, but I love comfort. I'm embarrassed to tell you that, but I really love nice things. Yep. And if my age group and my community just talk about, get together and talk about all the fun things we want to do, and there's nothing, I mean, Ecclesiastes tells us to enjoy what we have, the life that we have in Christ, and celebrate that. And it's okay to have things and, you know, live in moderation. But if I'm focused on comfort and that's what drives the conversations with my peer group,
yep,
or Lake House or a ranch, or we're in deep trouble. Yep. We're missing how our lives are going to remain significant and purposeful for God's kingdom.
Yep.
And so we just got to remind ourselves. I have to remind myself of that. You know, my wife is funny. You know, I'm the label buyer in our house.
Yeah.
She goes, why are you buying that? I can get you that at Target. Target? I'm not going to go to Target. You know, she never looks at label. Well, she looks at them, so she doesn't buy them.
Yeah.
You know, she'll just buy, what's the stuff that's athletic wear that's so expensive?
Lululemon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love the stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, I buy Lululemon. Yeah. Know? It's comfortable. She wouldn't put Lululemon. I've tried to buy her Lululemon forever. No interest. It's like, why would I do that when Athleta's about, you know, 60% of the price? And it's like, oh, you're so smart.
You've mentioned this one a bunch. This is the 10th. Remain an intentional learner.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it speaks for itself, but.
It does. It's the way I'm wired. It's just fun.
Yeah.
I love learn. When I heard about your podcast and you and Johnny and how this thing came about in the last 5 years, like, I want to hear more about that. It's just so cool. And I'm just really fascinated by our world and how it's evolved and the ways people can make money today. Some healthy, some not so healthy, but it's really fun. That's fun for me. So I intake a lot of information. Now, there's a downside to that. You know, it can suck up a lot of time. You can be disconnected sometime in relationships if you need to be present with your family and you're over here scrolling on some article, even if it's a good article in business or trying to, your health and working out or something, all those things. If you do too much of that, it can suck out the time that you really need to be to devoting to other core relationships. Yeah. So I'm aware of that. I can get distracted sometimes and I try to really, I'll go on a fast every once in a while from my phone and the information fast. It's like, just let your brain calm down.
Yeah.
You know, just put it to rest for a minute. So that's really the intentional learner aspect of, and it also is, hopefully it defeats my pride issue. You know, if I don't think I have it all figured out.
Yep.
You know, I need to learn. I need to learn from my friends and other people. And so being intentional about continuing to do that. Cloud Camp. You guys showing up for, you know, 48 hours. And it was, place didn't stink.
Yeah,
it was comfortable, wasn't it?
It was comfortable. It was good.
But, you know, it's what we did while we were there that people are going to remember.
Yeah.
Not how cool the spot was. It's like, what did we learn? How did we grow? What was the idea exchange? And it pays dividends.
I think the perfect way to bring it home, which it encapsulates the conversation we've had and through many of the lessons, but there was a quote, or you said it on another podcast or something that I was doing some research, but you just said, this goes back to the circle. No matter how good things are in your life, there's always something bad that needs to be worked on. And that is, I think, what that means to be in that circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when it's good, be really thankful and soberly aware that it may change soon.
Yeah.
See also what we've been through with my grandson.
Yeah.
It's like, in a moment's notice. I mean, we didn't know he was going to make it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had to prepare ourselves for that possibility. And, you know, so thankful God restored him. And he used the doctors too. But honestly, there's a lot of things that are just not explainable.
Yeah.
How he's been healed that doctors are kind of scratching their head over. So we know where that came from. It was the power of prayer and the mobilization of God's people on his behalf, and by his grace, we got an answer that we're so thankful for. But again, being soberly aware of it could change really quickly, or we might not have gotten the answer that we really wanted.
Yeah.
And we had to be faithful even in the midst of that. And that's really where the rubber meets the road in terms of saying you want to be a Christ follower and then really trying to live in the world like one.
Yep. Especially when it's at its toughest.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dean. This was awesome.
Man, great being with you.
Thank you very much.
Really fun. Thanks for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Fort Podcast. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform or hop on over to YouTube to watch full video episodes if that's what you prefer. For more information, you can check out thefortpod.com.